It says, a perverse man stirs up dissension, and a gossip separates close friends. Very often, what breaks up friendships is gossip. That you have a confidence that is shared with you that somehow gets out in publicly. And so those are two passages. There are some others. 1 Corinthians 15:33 is one I always shared with our kids. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Who your friends are will determine your spiritual walk almost as much as anything. They will either encourage you in it or they will discourage you in it. Ugly.
Just another principle of friendship. Is it working?
Yeah, it's working. It's working, isn't it,
yes.
Scott? Okay, let me.
Come on
over this. Okay. I want to give you a kiss.
Oh. Forget Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that's done now.
We have friends on different levels. One of the things that puts people under pressure is that they feel everyone they meet must become a really good friend. Well, we don't have either the capacity or the personalities to do that. So we have many acquaintances. Then some of them are drawn into casual relationships. Then still more are drawn into close relationships, and finally into intimate ones. This is a helpful illustration, not that you want to start categorizing this as acquaintance number two and close friend number four, but just so you understand, and sometimes people ebb and flow. For example, your most intimate friends in high school may be acquaintances now if you even know where they are. So you see, that's the way this works. And Jesus even had this system, it seems to us, when he was here on earth. He had the crowds to whom he shared a lot. Then he had the 70 that he gave specialized teaching and attention to. Then he drew in the 12, and of course he had Peter, James, and John as his most intimate friendships.
Just to talk for just a minute on how long does it take to develop these various levels of friendships? How long for an acquaintance? Just a minute. You make all of them here, don't you? Now everybody who is with, from your spouse to your closest friends, began at the acquaintance level. Now, close, casual friends, what would you say on that? How long?
About 3 or 4 times.
Yeah. You know them. You know their name. You run into them at work. You bump into them at the store. You connect with them. Now, in the close friendships, we divided it into three. One is a mentor relationship, that you might be a discipling. Another is what we call associate. Before, we'd call those functional. They're your relatives, the people you have to work with. They're the people you're interacting with on committees and whatever. I mean, you're going to see them all the time. But if you just met them on the street, they may not be your friends. And then the area where we're talking about is more the personal friendship. But for a close friendship, how long does it take for those to develop? Mm-hmm. How much?
Significant.
Yeah, significant. You know, now Mary always bugs me and talks about my close friends. We were driving out here. What was it yesterday? I said, oh, yeah, I got this really close friend. His name is... his name... and I couldn't think of his name. I got his first name.
And Jerry couldn't describe him, so I couldn't help him.
So, you know, some people are like that. I have people everywhere that I know. And she said, well, they're not your friends. We had this little debate. Anyhow, it probably takes a year or so to develop this close friendship. And how many of those could you have? You know, acquaintances, thousands, hundreds, depending
four or
on.
Five.
Pardon me?
Four or five.
Maybe even more. Maybe if you, of the personal, so you've got a lot of relatives, you've got people you work with. I don't know, 10, 15, 20, something like that, you might say, oh yeah, they're close friends. And a lot depends on your personality and your circumstances. But what about intimate?
Oh, maybe two.
Two? Three? Four?
Five.
Yeah, it's a small number, and it's our estimate that it takes you 3 to 5 years to develop this. And they will change a bit through the years. We feel, how many did we say for a lifetime you'd probably have?
Truly intimate friends, excluding your spouse, maybe 4 to 6.
For a lifetime.
With whom you would share everything, and so, there would be total communication, total vulnerability.
Yeah. Jack? Yeah. And he's getting, you're having throat
section.
Problem. Go ahead.
He asked if men and women differ in the number of intimate friends. And yes, I think that's true, but personality also has a lot to do with it.
I'd say that personality drives it more than men and women. I do believe that that women tend to have more intimate friends than men. Men rarely develop intimate friendships. Now, if you think if men don't, that fouls it up even more on developing a couple-to-couple friendship, because there are so many other issues that we're involved with.
And that's the section we're moving into right now.
Okay.
Differences between men and women.
Okay, you go ahead. What do you need?
You got to get your honey.
Okay, I've got that ready to go.
Okay.
Now, when do you want me to do that?
Right now.
Right now. Okay, this is going to be an experiment. Now, just a minute.
Introduce it. This came in on an email, and I want you to be thinking, did this email come to Jerry or to me? Just be thinking that while we go through this.
Now,
and we have put it on slides because it's just easier.
If we
had
really been with it. Wait a minute. My power is not on, Mary.
It just went off.
What?
Did I?
There was a light on.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Okay. Okay, now you can see it here, and you're going to listen to it here, and Mary will also try and put it up there. This is probably not worth it, but we're going to try it anyhow. What's that?
Like,
step aside.
You know.
You ready?
Okay.
You're my honey bun sugar, you're the Upton. You're my sweetie pie. You're my cupcake gumdrop, you're the apple of my eye. You're my honey bun sugar, you're the Upton. You're my sweetie pie. You're my cupcake gumdrop, you're the apple of my eye.
I want to go one more time.
You're my honey bun sugar plum, Humpty and the Umpkin. You're my sweetie pie. You're my cupcake gumdrop, you're the apple of my eye. You're my honey bun.
Okay. Isn't that cute? Now, ask the question, Mary.
Did that come to Jerry or me?
You.
You're right.
And
ladies,
did I forward it to anybody?
No.
Did Mary?
Yeah.
Okay, did you recognize it, Stan? Well, it came from Kaylin and Doug, yeah.
Now, guys, quick question. Why would you not forward that email to your friends?
It's
not what? Right, right.
Yeah.
Yes, it doesn't have much of a masculine touch, does it?
But guys, didn't you enjoy it? I mean, you think of your kids, you think of whatever, but send it forward? Not quite.
If I received that from one of my buddies, I'd be really nervous.
That's right. here. Okay, so much for my technical expertise. Okay.
We're also going to share a few other things that show the differences between men and women. And as we share these things, just think about your own relationships and how this affects you as couples relating to other couples. Have any of you ever heard of Betty McDonald? She was a writer in the 40s and 50s, wrote humorous things, lived on Vashon Island. And she made some comments about men's and women's friendships. Yeah,
there was a movie made of this one called The Egg and I. It's an old, old movie. And it's an old, old book. But there was one little section that I just hit it on the nose.
She said, a woman wants her friends to be perfect. She sets a pattern, usually a reasonable facsimile of herself, and lays a good friend out on this pattern and worries and prods at any little qualities that don't match up. She simply won't be bothered with anything less than a 90% continuity and will accept the 90% only if the other 10% is shaping up nicely. And if that promises accurate conformity within a certain time. Friends with glaring lumps or unsmoothable rough places are cast off like ill-fitting garments, and even if it means that this woman has no friends, she seems happier than with some imperfect being.
Now, a man has a friend, period. He chooses this friend because they both like to hunt ducks. And they both, and the fact that this friend seldom washes, that he swears and hates women and chews tobaccos and communicates in these four-letter words doesn't affect the relationship at all, and it continues on and on an even keel for years and years. Now, that shows you a little bit of a difference. Guys tend to be less demanding in friendships than women do.
Okay, a few more things.
Okay, do I start it? Okay, yeah. We're going to give you some comparisons. Don't even try and copy them down. We're going to hand this out.
We have a handout.
We have a handout to give it to you later. Just listen and enjoy it. Men are more optimistic and cheerful than women.
Women start 9 out of 11 marital quarrels.
That's true.
Hey, okay.
Hold on. We'll okay. have our turn, women.
Yeah. Men need 1 hour less of sleep per night than women.
Women, on average, get 1 hour less sleep per night than men.
Okay. Men change their minds more often than women.
Women take longer to make up their minds.
Okay, 28% of males think they're handsome.
98% of women would change something about their looks if they could.
Okay, men take 52 minutes in daily breaks at work, scheduled and unscheduled.
Women take 35 minutes in daily breaks, and they make 112% of the effort than men do.
Yeah.
See, we got ours back.
In the workplace. Yeah, right. Okay. Men base their friendship on shared activities.
And women base their friendships on emotional intimacies.
Men interrupt conversation with women 96% of the time.
Women interrupt each other equally, but rarely interrupt men.
Men are right-brained, which makes them good at spatial things like maps, puzzles, and they use the brain hemispheres independently.
Women are more left-brained, which makes them more verbal. They use both hemispheres coordinately. And the last one, 80% of a woman's need for meaningful touch is non-sexual.
And the reverse is true for men. Now.
Okay, we have that for you afterwards,
yeah,
if you're interested.
You can get a copy of it. There's some more things in it, too. And we thought, I think what we want to point out is this really makes a tremendous difference as you're thinking of a couple-to-couple friendship. And in the way men think about friendship and the way women do. So when you do the complexity of putting them together, you can see the problem, that no one's expectations are going to be fully met. Now go ahead with this one, Mary.
Okay, just quickly a little more on the differences between men and women. Oop, that was supposed to be. Sorry, this was transposed when it went to our assistant, and this is left, okay? Yeah. This is right.
Just let checking your brain functioning.
Just let your hemisphere switch over.
Are we going to get a copy of this?
No. This you don't have a copy of.
We can leave it up for a little bit. In the mostly female left brain, we see things in images, larger patterns. We can see the entire situation. Ladies, have you ever been dealing with three little children and somebody's at the door wanting to sell you something, and your husband comes with one specific question? You're seeing the whole thing. He is looking more at individual situations. Women are intuitive, more emotional. Remember, this is generalized because we toss in personalities and everything else. Women are more abstract and more creative.
Okay, and the men, am I supposed to do that second?
Sure.
Okay.
Right brain, guys.
Mostly male, men depend more on exact words, and they depend on sequential ideas.
In exact words, there's the story of the man who came to his wife who was working at the kitchen sink, and he was back here. And as he came in, he said, would you like to go out tonight? Sure. And she dropped everything and turned around and got ready, and they went out and had a nice dinner. And it was only when they returned home that he confessed he was speaking to the dog. So, yeah. She was thinking in images. He was exact word.
And then she said, well, what's the difference, huh? Yeah. Okay, so
Sorry. The
sequential, men tend to want to be logical, and in most discussions in marriage, it isn't logic that counts, no matter what. Men tend to want to be concrete and have a literal interpretation. So now, those are generalized things, but it gives you an idea of why, both in marriage and when we're developing friendships, that there are, we're kind of sometimes going like this.
Okay.
Where we got next.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the one she was supposed to correct it. But you got that. Okay. Okay, now let's move to the next section. We're trying to get into the specifics of the couple-to-couple friendships. Why don't you move over here, and I'll do that as we record.
Okay,
what is it that, why, well, let's say, why should you try and develop couple-to-couple friendships? Why not just let it go, do a few things socially as couples, and not worry about really being together, but just guys, you do your things, women, you do your things, it's happier, it's easier, and so forth. Now, Dave and Myrna are in a couples Bible study that we have, and Stan and Lois have been in one too that we've had. But the fact is that we have purposely chosen to do couples studies rather than either women's studies or men's studies. Now, I have a men's study, but they're different. Now, Dave and I are in two different studies. We're in a men's study on Thursdays, every other Thursday,
when we make it.
That's right. And I know Myrna's in some other studies. Let me just ask you guys, what's different about it being in the couple studies versus those others?
I think in the couple studies we share a lot more than we do in a different way than what we do in the specific men's studies. It doesn't seem to go as deep in those as it does in the couple study.
Yeah, it goes to, and it goes different tracks, doesn't it?
Different tracks.
And when Stan, yeah, Stan?
I took Derek Rodriguez to Bible study fellowship for a year. He's a my cardiologist. But he says, I do not want to grow spiritually without my wife.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, see, I think Bible study fellowship is one of the greatest things since sliced bread. It usually starts with women. And what happens, and men are out just working like crazy, you know, 12, 14 hours a day. And if the wife is fortunate enough not to have to work in a secular context, she can spend all this time. So what happens on spiritual growth? The wife roars ahead. The man doesn't even think about it. And that's why you find that women run churches. They may not be on the committees, but it'll be something else. Okay, so that, just to give you an idea, let's talk about some benefits. First of all, there is spiritual encouragement that comes about in a number of different ways in a couple-to-couple friendship. I think there's a different kind of accountability that happens, and I'm going to bring up that again later. There's a spiritual sharing and learning that is also different than man-to-man. The women will drive the discussion usually more personal and more deeply. And certain little arguments and tensions will start to come up that would never even be addressed if it were just woman-to-woman or man-to-man, or it'll turn into gossip and complaining about one another. And there also is the issue of just prayer and support. For instance, when our son was killed 12 years ago, Stan and Lois and two other couples were here at our house from the West Coast before we even got home, literally took over our lives, and it was the first test, in a sense, of what we had established as a covenant relationship. And we'll talk to you about that in a little bit. But wouldn't you guys say that really kind of, that was the first thing that really said, yep, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to stay together for a lifetime. So that's a spiritual encouragement. The second thing is some kind of spiritual commonality. That is, we need to have some common endeavors that isn't just playing bridge together. And it's not just going to the football game at the University of Oklahoma or the Air Force Academy or wherever it is, but something where we're connected together in either outreach or concern or Bible study or something of that nature. Because I believe that the greatest friendships are forged in the heat of battle, not just out having some you know, interesting social times.
The one of the main things that we appreciate about couple-to-couple friendships is that it does give us deeper life enjoyment in our own relationship. Everybody brings something to the relationship, and we find that it enhances our own marriage and those that we are very close to. We feel we maybe have something to contribute to their marriage. We observe and we speak both to the marriage of those that we are really close with. And if that isn't happening with really close friends, it may not be because you have a perfect marriage, but there may still be a lacking in total openness with one another.
And can I interrupt you for
sure.
Just a second? Now I'm going to ask Olin and Gail. Olin and Gail traveled with us to China and Africa, and when I interview them tomorrow, you'll hear, well, you may not hear much about that. Let me ask you guys a question. What if just Olin had gone along on that trip, Gail, and it had just been Olin and me that had gone and done it? Would it have meant, and he came back and showed you all those pictures, what would have been the difference?
To me, not much. And I might have felt a little envy and
yeah.
Exclusion.
Right. Or vice versa, if you'd just gone, it'd been something. But see, the fact was that the four of us, it was actually six of us, we went together, and so it started building a common bond around some common experiences that, as time went on, starts joining us together. And if it just been the individuals, instead of the couples, I think it would have been a very, very different outcome.
We learn how to communicate from one another. I think one big benefit is gaining child-rearing ideas from one another. And that doesn't just mean when they're little tykes. It means even more so when they're grown and how we can continue to relate in a good way. And just ideas for activities in our own marriage. Very helpful. And then every couple has something to contribute. Every person in a relationship. In this group Jerry just mentioned, there are eight people, four couples, all of us different. And we all have something to contribute, and we all have something to learn. I was traveling in eastern Colorado Sunday, I guess it was, and stopped at a filling station and found this little sign, and I thought, this is perfect, describing not just one couple, but several couples.
So it says, I'd like to live in the fast lane, but I'm married to a speed bump. And now there's a reason that Mary did that, is I tend to have about 12 gears and operate in 11 and 12 most of the time, and these folks in our covenant group keep getting on my case to slow it down and to pay attention to Mary and, you know, a few little things like that. And so that's the speed bump idea.
But you have extroverts, you have introverts, you have people who have godly wisdom, you have those who are humorous and fun, and so everybody brings something. And the last thing we want to do in couple-to-couple friendships is try to crowd everyone into the same mold, but rather to keep leaning on those differences and appreciating them.
And I think the protection and accountability of couple-to-couple relationships are great. When it's only a man to a man or a woman to a woman, you never get the whole story. Okay, and so let's suppose that one or the other is starting to get in trouble, spiritually, morally, inside the marriage. Yeah, it's interesting to have that discussion and complain or whatever, but there's not the check and balance of would I say this if my wife were here, or would I say this if my husband were here. And when I say it, what's the look on her face or his face? And then the others listen. The other couple or couples, but let's just say one couple, say, wait a minute, something's not adding up here. And so it engenders some discussion. I would say that as a result of the Bible studies that we've done with couples through the years, and we hear about it usually the next week in study, the discussions between husband and wife on the way home are quite interesting. Right? We've heard that, haven't we, Dave? Said, man, we argued all the way. You said, but what? I didn't know you thought that way. And it goes on. Because things come out in that. Now, but here's the key thing. Accountability. I've done a lot of men's groups, and I do this accountability iceberg, and men don't really share and whatever. And then you get this little list of questions to ask, and you decide whether you're going to lie about them or not. Okay, the fact is, you can get away with almost anything if it's just a structured list of questions. But when you know somebody well enough that you just sense that something isn't right. I mean, just think of your marriage. You walk in the house, and in 15 seconds, what do you know? How things are between you. I mean, if you're one or the other, a little ticked off, a little, hi, how you doing? You know, and it just kind of, and I believe the same needs to be there. You build your relationship so that when things go wrong, you sense it, not without even asking a question. Now, that takes some time. We'll talk about that. Go ahead.
Another really great benefit is how we can influence each other's children. And we have watched this through the years with many of our close couple relationships. And eventually the children start influencing each other. And it's a beautiful thing to see. We can pray with one another for our kids. We can counsel. We can have an impact directly on the children. I think of Stan, who often takes the children, little older children, of friends, hunting and fishing. Mom and Dad stay home, Stan and the kids go. And making memorable times and being able to contribute and build into the lives of each other's kids.
Well, I just remember recently, some of you met Rick, Stan and Lois's son, who's been here, you know, a month and a half ago or 2 months. He was kind of going through a few speed bumps. So he calls me and says, can I come down?
Yeah.
Lives in Denver. So here he is. We're laying in bed. He is, all 6 foot four of them are strung across the bottom of our bed. And he's talking in our bedroom, talking about what he's going through. You remember that?
When that? No.
Okay, and so we can minister Rick.
In the bed.
What?
You don't. We didn't know what happened in the bed.
That did happen. It happened on the bedroom, and he's there like that. You know, we didn't try and get away. We do everything in our bedroom. Our grandchildren, everybody's piles on this bed. Or Mary is discipling by email the daughter of one of the other couples in our covenant group.
Who lives in Sweden.
And so, and our kids have interacted with all their, these ambassadors. And our kids say, almost every one of them say, we want friendships like that. And they're looking for them. See, they've got a little model. We say, be patient. It's slow going. Okay.
Now we're going to ask Stan and Lois to come up. They are going to talk to you about the last issue, which is fun. They are the most creative people when it comes to stimulating friendships. Jerry's too intense, and I'm a little flat. But when we get together with them, they are wonderful in just bringing some pizzazz and spark to friendships.
Let me just give a little of the history. We've known Stan and Lois for 24 years, and we were together in Bible study most of the time. We lived up in Seattle for about a five-year period. We met them through one of the other couples that we were becoming friends with, and it's often a stair-step thing. And through the years, we have flowed in and out, not in, never out, but, you know, we've varied the intensity, how often, and the connections that we have with them. We've had in our little covenant group, we've had some difficulties, we've had some disagreements. For years we put Stan on the hot seat. Now they've turned it around and they're putting me on the hot seat every time we get together. Yeah, and so they are really some of our dearest friends that have labored with us. So we wanted to get not only the fun part, but just a perspective on what this has done for you and why it's different than just you and Mary or just Stan, you and me getting together. So come on up. I'll get it.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to flip this right in the edge of it here. Okay. Well.
That's my 80% working on it today.
Come on, Stan, stop that.
I was reminded of us men, Jerry, and you're going to have to classify Jerry and I before this seminar is over. First, we forget names, then we forget faces, then we forget to zip up. And then we forget to zip down.
No, no.
Now, what's interesting about that is that we are going to be friends through all of those stages. And we're on the back nine. We're on the back nine, so the things we've gone through now have been challenging, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens
as we approach that.
We're supposed to be the fun. One of the things that we have learned through the friendships, and this is something that Stan did years ago when Jerry and Mary were in Seattle, and we were in Bible study with them, and we would get together for all kinds of things and fun times and Christmases. We'd have family talent shows for Christmas, and we just had a great time with them, and we knew at the time that it was special. And we were conscious of this. And then we remember sitting at a Mariner baseball game and they tell us they're leaving. Mm-hmm. We're going, oh, brother. And Stan just deliberately said, I'm not going to let them out of our lives. And so Stan would call them. Yeah. What, you'd call Jerry about once a week?
I try to call him. When I don't do it now because... Yeah. But then
We've got him now.
Hey, I wasn't. They weren't drawn to us. We were like a pit bull to them.
But the point is that in some relationships, you need to be very deliberate and very committed, and sometimes that is costly, but very, very much worth it.
Yeah, I want to add a little bit to that, Lois. Don't push me ahead here. I think the reason we developed friendships is because years ago I decided to hunger and thirst after righteousness. I was a father, but I realized I wasn't a spiritual leader. I was giving money to the church and falling on my knees and saying, God, what can I do? I went to Bible study fellowship. But I said, God, I'm not growing. And God in his graciousness sent Chris and Alice, who connected. And Chris, now listen, this is it. You seek after God, and God wants to make sure that you're serious. So he's not in a hurry. Mm-hmm. Number two is Chris came in my life, and I said, Chris... He says, I see where you're going in your business. You're successful, but where are you growing spiritually? I said, I know where I want to go, but I have nobody to lead me. So God sent Chris. But Chris said, I need somebody. I need to get someone. So he sought. He heard Jerry was coming in town, and those guys connected, and we were involved with Chris and Alice. But the point of it is it starts on your knees. It starts with hungering and thirsting after righteousness. And if you do that, God will fill you. Let me read this real quick from Dallas Willard. Of course we need to do... This is finding others who are walking the walk. Okay. Of course we need to... Of course we need to do all those things that turn our thoughts toward God in close association with others who know the realities of spiritual formation by such means. Spiritual formation cannot, in the nature of the case, be a private thing because it is a matter of whole life transformation. Now, this is what I want you to remember. You need to seek out others in your community who are pursuing the renovation of the heart. That's who you want. People that are pursuing the renovation of the heart. Why don't you just talk about that, Lois?
One of the things that we have learned is that friendships kind of come and go, and there are times when you really want to be friends with somebody, but it doesn't really happen. And we have learned to just hold friendships with an open hand. And sometimes they come around and you become deep friends, and sometimes they never do, but it's all okay. Even though you might have a desire to be a good friend with somebody, it may not happen. So we've learned to just kind of hold friendships with an open hand. And sometimes we have friendships that are really good friendships, but we don't see a lot of them. We might talk to them on the phone, but we don't see them all that often. But we still make a commitment to stay in touch and be together as much as we can.
And if you close the hand, you won't be possessive. What it does is it closes out the Holy Spirit to work in that relationship. you are forcing the Holy Spirit out of that. You need to say this. Now, we were afraid we were going to look. Jerry and Mary kicked us out of our Bible study, and then they left us. And all those times were times, will they ever be in our life again? But instead of hold, well, I guess I did call. But the point of it is you need to really, really let God do good.
We would say that our deepest friendships have come from being in Bible study together. Not only with Jerry and Mary, but other couples that we've had in Bible studies together. And that's probably where our deepest friendships have come. And we are big on playing together. That's the gift that we bring to the covenant group. They're all spiritual and serious and that kind of stuff.
I'm not theological, but I'm fun. You know, let me tell you, one of the greatest compliments that I've had is Chris Canlis's son is Matt Canlis, and he has had a baby boy named Chapman, and they came home from England one time, and he said, "Stan, will you make memories with Chapman like you've made with us? Will you make?" And I thought, man. What a great way to live a life with friends, huh? The other thing is, if you love somebody, you invest in their children. I can do more for Jerry and Mary's children, and sometimes they can do more for us. So, but back to fun. Memories are fun, right? That was part of that, hun. That's
okay. Really nice. So part of our philosophy is making memories and just doing things that are just fun to do and to be with.
Why don't you give the story?
Remember to give the story, Doug and Kaylin?
What was you going to say?
I was just going to do something.
Okay, go ahead.
Road trips together with people are really fun. You never know what's going to happen next, where the conversation's going to turn. You don't know. Vacationing with people is really fun. Bonding experiences.
One time we went on a hike and Lois got everybody a kite pack. All of us had a kite and we went up top of the hill and had these kites, and the men were fighting with each other in fights, kite fight wars. And go ahead.
I always like to do something different at Christmas time for our family when we get together. And one year I did juggling balls, and there were instructions and stuff, so we were all learning to juggle with these juggling balls. It was really fun.
And this Christmas
we did a family band. I went into Restoration Hardware, and there were these red boxes that said family band. And I thought, sounds fun. What do we do with that? So we had our Bible study group over for dinner, and then we live on Puget Sound, and it was they do Christmas ships that come, and they have carolers on the ships, and they build a big bonfire, and it was just down the beach for us. So we told them to bring their flashlights and their hiking boots, and we hiked in the dark down the beach to the bonfire and listened to the music on the Christmas ships, and we came back, and I said, "Okay, we have one more thing." You know, it was getting kind of late.
Yeah.
I said, "We've got a family band." So we knew that Derek played the piano, but we didn't know if he played good or not. So we sat him down to play the piano, and he wasn't very good. We got this family band out, and so there's little bongo drums, and there's tambourines, and there's this other little thing that you do with noise, and there's a couple shaker things. So we passed these out. We're trying to sing into the music, and I hear on a CD a really lively song come up. So I says, "Derek, you're fired. We're going to do it to the..." We got that music going, and every time the song changed,
you have to remember,
we had to pass an instrument because some of them were more fun than the others. And then Derek goes, "Okay." He said, "Christmas train." So Larissa got up, and we all went around the house with our instruments in the Christmas train to the Christmas music.
Yeah, we were walking around shaking our bodies and our instruments. we had to change instruments on every song. And
are we done? Can we do one more thing?
Sure.
Doug and Kaylin missed one of our covenant group times one time, and they called and said, because of a family emergency, they said, "Can we come up and see you guys and just spend a weekend?" So we said, "Sure, come on up." And so they came up, and we have this wonderful guest bed that we put people in that they just love being in. And so they stayed down in the guest room, and I forget what we did that for. Oh, the first day, like I said, we live on the Sound, and so it was low tide, and our daughter and her husband came up, and so we walked 2 miles up the beach to a restaurant and had lunch, and then we'd park the car up there and came back. And so I went to Anthony's and had fish tacos. So it was great fun. Great day. Next day we were going to go to Vancouver on a train. We can catch a train to Vancouver just a couple miles from our house, go up for the day, bring the train back down, and come back at night. So I had the whole day planned, meals and everything around this train trip. Well, I'm watching the news the night before, and it goes, there's been a trestle fire on the train track between here and Bellingham. I go, oh, that's not good. Get up in the morning, we get a phone call at 6:45 from Amtrak saying the train's been canceled. I'm going, what are we going to do? They're going, what are we going to do today, Lois? And I'm going, I have no idea. Give me a few minutes. So we, Doug and Kaylin were easy, and so we said, well, let's go out to breakfast. So we go back up to Edmonds and go out to breakfast, and we say, well, let's go on a ferry ride. So we brought a deck of cards with us, and we have this card game we play called Master Servant. So we said, we're going to teach them to play Master Servant. So we're waiting for the ferry. We've got the cards out, teaching them how to play this game. So we get on the ferry, and we play on the ferry, and then we get off and go have coffee in Kingston, and we play cards at the coffee shop. And we go back to the ferry, and we play Master Servant, this ongoing game, on the ferry, and we get off, and it's only noon. So we said, well, do you want to hike again? They said, sure. We said, well, we haven't ever been south on our beach at low tide, so let's do that. So we take a little backpack, and we start heading south, and we hike probably four miles on the beach.
Car Key Park.
Car Key Park down the beach. And we're just having a great time, getting a little tired. So we get to the Car Keep Park, and by this time the tide's coming back in. So we sit on the park bench and we play cards. And then we call a taxi to come get us, to take us back home. So I'm going, okay, what are we going to do for dinner tonight? I don't have anything planned for dinner. And so Kaylin goes, you know, those fish tacos were really good last night.
Fish tacos.
She says, I wouldn't mind having those again.
Let's go back to.
So we said, okay, let's go back for fish tacos. So we get to the restaurant, and there's a wait. You can't make reservations. These guys made me play cards in the restaurant, waiting in line for fish tacos. We go sit down at the table. We play cards while we're having dinner. The point is, have fun together.
Well, actually, the point is...
What's the point?
The point is...
Now Kaylin has cancer. She just had surgery.
That's why they're not here this week.
And they said... And they had a whole... If I told you they're weak, you wouldn't believe it. It's just out of the bad place. But they said, what can we do? Where can we get restored? So they wrote us a letter last night. If we had time, I would love to read it. But they want to come up, and they want to be with us because they need restoration. They need, and what a privilege. And Lois is going to give up her time on the Horizon board so we can serve them. But what a great opportunity to just minister and love them at this time. So that's it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm still hooked up.
Well, the reason, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words, and that's pretty typical, just the flexibility, but there's something else. This doesn't happen in an hour and a half on Tuesday evening. You see what I mean? I mean, this happens over periods of time. When we first met Chris and Alice, Chris and I, when we first moved to Seattle, Chris and I got together for lunch. We said, well, it might work, but the key is, will it work with our wives? That is us getting together on a discipleship basis. So they brought their entire family down to our house. I don't know whether it was that night or the next night. I told Mary, and she says, he runs a 5-star restaurant. You're asking him to my house? You know, and it was that kind of a thought, but we had a great time, but all the kids together, all of us together, we've done that a number of times, and our kids flow in and out of these relationships. Now, the primary thing, though, is that we are together. There is fun, but there are a lot of... You could pick it up from Stan. I mean, this is not just a light, fun thing. We get into in-depth. None of us would make business decisions without talking with one another, or major life decisions without talking to one another. Where are we?
Right here. Barriers.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the barriers to establishing these kinds of friendships. There are a lot of barriers, and this is the big one. And that is, you don't do this on the backstroke. I mean, you
don't do
have
it on the backstroke.
Backstroke. You have to take time and take some commitment. Now, you can't do that with everybody, folks. You have to make some choices. But wherever we've been, we've had a number of friendships that whenever they call, whatever it is, if it's physically possible, we work it out. Remember our New Year's Eve party, Dave and Myrna? They all finked out on us. So Dave and Myrna and Mary and I went out to dinner and just had a great time. They were going to have the party at their house, and everybody had some other things that came up. But if you don't put in the time and the effort, so you need to make some decisions. And most of us are too much in a hurry. And so you do need something that's regular, like a Bible study. But then you also need some extended times. And what we have done, which we tried to do with our group here, we've been having a hard time doing it, getting off just for a weekend. You've got little kids and everything. It's just hard to do. I mean, it really takes effort to just go to a weekend and do nothing. We got it once, and we're working on some other thing. But the fact is, something happens in those longer times together, like a conference like this or whatever, that doesn't happen on the rush, because we start our Bible study at 7, we quit at 9, bingo, and we're gone, because people are busy.
Is it warm in here?
Yes. Yes.
Can we open the door? That one's open.
You can probably open a window.
How about
back?
Opening a window?
Yeah.
A lot of hot air in here.
So. Yes, Dan, a lot of hot air in here.
Okay, the next one is that when you have couple-to-couple friendships, it is complex. See all these relationships that have to go on. Husband one and husband wife have to have a relationship, and the same for husband two and wife two. And then you have to have these relationships, husband one to husband, wife one to wife two. Then you add another couple, and it gets even more complicated. You have all of these people trying to understand, trying to relate. And it really takes God's grace to keep that going in a warm and supportive way. It's complex, and we don't come. This isn't one unit, unit two and unit three, but they're all individuals, all having to relate back and forth. You see this in your families, how complicated it can be as the family grows, and then as they bring in-laws into the family, it gets even more complicated.
Mm-hmm. Then with that, you've got incredible personality differences. Mm-hmm. I mean, the couples that we've been with, everybody is just different. And some irritate you. I mean, and there are issues. I mean, no relationship is perfect. I mean, you irritate one another as husband and wife. You don't realize there's this big personality difference, and then you get married and you're stuck. And then, but the same thing happens in friendships, that these personality differences. So you need to have understanding and tolerance. What we did, we got together with our little group of four in October, and we worked through a little book called the Enneagram. And we usually have a book that we're working on.
Have you seen this?
Anybody
ever
seen this? It's kind of like, if you know the Myers-Briggs, the MBTI. Okay, this is a similar thing, and this takes 9 basic personality types, and you generally can find yourself, and it's got a lot of good description. Well, the thing that it helped us to do was just to, we learned more about one another, and we helped one another. And then this one, we haven't gotten into it yet, Doug Hignell brought it with, is the combination of the Enneagram and the Myers-Briggs. So
we'll put these down has any interest.
Put them here that you can take a look at them. I don't know, was it helpful to you guys?
But we had, of the nine personalities, there was only eight of us there, and there were seven different personality types that were different.
Yeah. Seven in the group of eight of us. And then Lois never could figure out hers.
And I got to live with that.
And you got to live. So we all voted as to what Lois was. And so we had a lot of fun, but it's difference in personalities. Okay, dearie.
Geographical separations can make a difference if we allow it to hinder a friendship. But in our day and age, we have so many things that can help us overcome this. And so if we just have the mindset, we are not going to let this friendship go. When we moved from Seattle back to Colorado Springs, one of our friends came to us weeping and said, well, that's the end of this friendship. Well, what do you mean? You know, there's the telephone, there's the airplane, there's the U.S. Postal Service at that time. And now it's even easier with email and just all of the ways we can communicate. We don't have to let this be a barrier.
Yeah, and in fact, their experience had been out of sight, out of mind. And they just, and that's the way they lived. And I remember we had an argument about between 11 o'clock at night and 1 o'clock. We decided to go on a vacation together. I don't think you guys went to that one. That was at the Sea Lazy U. You remember that one?
They weren't there.
Yeah. And we just got together, and they said, well, it's basically our swan song. And we said, this is not going to happen. And so we had to debate what the depth of this friendship was. The other factor, geographical separations take a lot of effort. But if they're deep enough friendships, you'll do it. Okay, now I have these two in here. Okay, first of all, there are going to be conflicts. A few years ago, one of the couples, not that these four, I'm using these as illustrative because we have other, all of us have other friendships. But one of the couples started going a doctrinal direction that caused some real tension inside our group. And they'd be happy if we shared it. And if they were here, they'd get up and share it. And they felt disapproval from some others. And this really created some tensions. But we said, we are going to keep going through this and walking through this. And we did. If a conflict will come up, there will be personal conflicts, there will be things that are said, and you have to make a decision that you will not allow that to ruin it and to walk through it. And I'm sure there are ones that could just totally destroy it, but you've got to be it. Then the other thing is the failure to achieve depth. It's easy to stay on the surface, but difficult times, suffering, and some marriage problems help you achieve depth. You say marriage problems help you? Yes, it does. Because if you are willing to expose those inside the group, then you have someone walking with you to work through you with it. But most of us don't expose our marriage issues until we end up in the psychologist's office or the lawyer's office. Those are the two places they finally come out, except maybe in the privacy of our own bedroom. Now, we'll do this quickly because we want to get down to questions and answers with you. But the elements of couples' friendships. Well, you do need you're coming to that, okay. The men do need to be good friends, and the women do need to be good friends. And I think that still is a foundational issue. And you need to learn to enjoy one another. There isn't as much between one husband to someone else's wife. I mean, we don't have all that incredible amount of connection. You know, I don't call Lois and just talk on to her for a long time, or I don't go up to Seattle and say, let's go to lunch. Not that we couldn't. But there are little guards that you want to put in. We don't, you know, there have been couples, friendships, where there have been some emotional relationships that go wrong. You just have to know that it's there, and you make sure it isn't part of it. But the men need to be friends, and the women need to be friends. Okay, Mary?
important factor is to be intentional, and we've covered this, and Lois and Stan did a good job of covering this. It doesn't just happen. There have to be plans, schedules, definitely that strong commitment, experiencing the variety that each person in couple-to-couple relationships brings.
You can do that one.
No.
Variety. We've already really covered the variety of activities. Okay. I'll take these last three, and then we're going to open up to some Q&A. First of all, not everybody gets along with everyone else. There are a lot of common circumstances that you need. Usually age is an issue. The kind of employment, whether someone is college educated, I mean, whether their work backgrounds, their affluence, you know, they're all of those. I'll never forget a small group at our church, and I said, I told the pastor, I said, this isn't going to work. So we met with this small group.
It was a sign.
It was kind of like counting off, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the ones get over here. Okay, we had Mary and me, then we had a hippie, then we had a woman who was 73, then we had a couple that we didn't know that were sort of different, and I mean, we sat to have this small group discussion, and nobody knew what anybody was talking about because there was absolutely no commonality. Those lasted not very long. So there needs to be a commonality, and there needs to be a mutual drawing that you just enjoy being together. There needs to be the common interest, and there needs to be, and this may be the one that we'll swallow twice, a long-term commitment. Every friendship is not a long-term commitment. But we really encourage a few that you decide that there will be a long-term commitment. In December, we were with our longest-term friends back in Dayton. Since second lieutenants, we've been together. Now, I'd love to have them be a part of what we are doing with these four, but number one, they don't have the finances. They live a long ways away. And they're just in a totally different circle. But when we're with them, we're some of the very best of friends. Our kids have grown up together. We live next door to one another. I recruited them to the Air Force Academy. They, you know, we did so much together in the early years of our marriage. And we have a few other friendships that are really developing and are very, very good. And I think our friendships, I think they're really developing in our group, don't you, Dave and Myrna? And to watch some of the interactions happen is so great. John and Nancy Ball, who are here at this conference, have been in about two sets of studies and are some of our very finest friends. And we just value those. But they're not possessive friendships where jealousy comes of, oh, well, you got with so-and-so and you win. No, you don't do that. You hold them with an open hand. You relish them. But at the beginning time, it takes a lot of effort to develop them. You know, Olin Gale and we have traveled together now a couple times. We've been together. We're at a good distance. We don't have too many common circles. But I'd say our friendship is developing, right? But it wouldn't just with going to dinner out like we've done a couple times out your way. That won't do it. It's got to be something else. So we've tried to sort of spill out our lives as to what we honestly try and do. And we wanted friends here who... You know whether this is reality or not. But now let's just open it to you to have some discussion, and maybe you want to say, how can I do it, and what happened when, and so forth.
Do we still want this?
Yeah, leave it on. So what are some of your thoughts?
The part about being intentional is extremely important. I know, Mary, you do a lot of that, you know, just thinking about and taking the time to try to plan. And that's really important in our group because a lot of us get so busy that time flies and you don't even know. And if it wasn't for your intentional planning, a lot of that get-together time wouldn't happen. So that's real important.
And it's really fun to watch Anne now try and get the wives together. You notice how she was doing that and some others. And we all start taking some responsibilities, not just one.
Heather and I found that... An X factor in all of this is children, particularly young children, where you have a situation where Heather and I would really like being together with another couple, but the kids don't get along very well. Or the kids get along really, really well, but there's not a love connection between the between the couples. Can you speak to that a little bit and how you work toward developing relationships that include young children, older children, and
If it doesn't work out, keep looking, because there are couples out there with whom you will mesh. But if you really enjoy the couple, I think there are things that you can do with the children to help them become better integrated. If there are, in our situation, we had the oldest children. Well, they did babysitting. They had creative ideas for the younger children. But you can't expect them to come together, the children to come together and just suddenly connect.
Yeah.
And so there has to be, in this intentionality, also planning and preparing for the children, yeah, so that they have some connection. We used to have slumber parties. Remember that when we go to each other's
all
houses and have
get in one house and just
sleepovers
spread over. Yeah. So. Yeah. Let me just say one other thing on here. Make sure your needs are met first. If your needs are met, the kids will eventually come along. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you handle your relationships with your extended family? Does it take a backseat to your pursuit of friendships with, you know, with other friends? With your own brothers and sisters and
everything. Yeah, now especially you've got a lot of them close by, I'll bet.
Sure.
Yeah, it's really helpful to have them at a distance.
Good luck.
Sorry about that, Todd. I hold this cut off crew. Yeah,
it's true.
It's a real
truth. Bring that up is because the culture where we live is
yeah,
very much family oriented.
Yeah. Okay.
And
Mary speaks.
Your
first.
Relatives can be your best friends. They can be part of that circle that you're setting up. And remember, friends come and go, but family's forever.
Yeah.
You can't ever get rid of them. So, you know, it's legitimate. And
you can't choose them either. No, that was those associate friendships.
Yeah.
That's where that was. They're in there.
But they can
they
be the close,
be close
ones.
Friends. Now, remember, you can't do everything, but you need one or two or three other couples outside of that circle of friends. For one thing, you need it for outreach and for just going beyond and stimulating yourself and also building a pattern for your own kids. The chances of your kids staying around Cut Off and Baton Rouge and those areas is relatively small the way society is. You need to set some patterns for them, but that is a complicating factor, certainly. I think we're okay time-wise. Yeah. Yeah.
David? Jerry, I like to deal in marriages when, our youngest daughter just called, and her husband's up at Harvard getting an LLM, and she said, well, Matt comes home, he doesn't pay with the kids. And I said, well, honey, men are different. You know, if the refrigerator works and the roof doesn't leak, they think the marriage is good.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
And then she said, well, he's not inspection. And the girls are really good looking, you know, okay, they look like my wife, you know. And so I said, well, if he told you once he left you, he'll let you know if he changes his mind.
Yeah.
That's kind of amuser, you know. But it kind of, I like to counsel them all I can. We want to have fun with them. Maybe that's not, I'm just saying, such a good friendship. But.
Well, it is, but see, what we found in those days, Mary took more responsibility to make sure that I connected well with the family. I'd come home from whatever, especially when I was in grad school, and she'd have a picnic pack and say, we're going to the park and the kids are there and I couldn't study. You know, I had to go and we were out there with them, and she would think ahead at those kinds of times. And there are times that one or the other in the couple, the women, I'll guarantee, are going to drive the social aspects of it. The men just are oblivious.
Yeah. You notice who was looking to Lois for the activity that day, not to Stan.
Yeah, nobody asked Stan what you should do. They ask him, how's your foot? But other than that, go ahead.
Talk a little bit about making friends with your grown children and how you include those.
Yeah.
at their pace and interest. We can't force ourselves. We have been where they are. They have never been where we are. And so if we try to bring them into our world, it doesn't always work. But if we enter their world at their invitation and without forcing ourselves on them, the friendships are going to be enriched and deeper.
And the other thing is, your kids are going to be out there, and we're at that stage. They've got kids, and that's a big focus. But we don't just close down the world outside us and go be only grandparents. We love that, and it's a great experience. But we still have our personal needs, and we still have our personal responsibility for evangelism and for reaching out and connecting. So they say they're in the sandwich generation. I think people our age are in that. And we have a lot of demands on us, so we say we make the adjustments, not them. And we connect with them.
I think the ladies are going to lunch.
Oh, that's right. You got to run this thing, don't you? Do you want to just take off and I'll wind this up?
Okay, if anybody wants one of these differences between men and women, it's not to become hostile. it's for understanding.
Okay, why don't you just take off? I'll clean
it. May I be excused?
Yeah. Mary's got to run this lunch and I'll get it. Before you leave, let me just kind of conclude this thing. Mary and I believe that this element of life is one of the most important you can ever do. You can go out and evangelize, you can go out and do everything, you can work like crazy, you can make lots of money, you have lots of kids, but if you don't develop some of these kinds of relationships, we believe that you will have a lot of poverty in your life. What really got us thinking about was this. When we're moving to Seattle, there's more to it than what even these guys may know. We had not been with the Navigators full time very long. I went full time with the Navs when I was 35. Okay, and we just busted ourselves to try and develop relationships with our Nav staff. And I mean, I'd be in their homes, we'd walk through their problems. Then I got reassigned up to Seattle. And we really thought we developed some in-depth relationships with our Navigator staff couples around the Southwest and in Colorado and Arizona. We moved, and it was kind of like somebody cut the phone lines. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Not one call, not one anything. And I said, what's going on? Well, what we determined was our relationships were functional, not personal. And I still remember standing in the line. We went to Hawaii for a little bit, and we stood in the line waiting to go in to hear Jim Neighbors over in Honolulu. And we sat and wrote an outline for a book on friendship. That's what Mary and I did, what we created. And we made a determination when we moved to Seattle that we need to start thinking differently about this. Now remember, that was not when we were in our 20s. We didn't know enough. 20s to think on these ways. And so don't be impatient with yourself, but do be intentional. And it is one of the most rewarding aspects. That's why we always try and do couples Bible studies, is because of this. We feel we're relating to the whole person, and it's hopefully in some depth. So let's pray. Father, thank you now for just this time. Pray this help a few of us to think about this and to develop these deeper relationships. We pray in Christ's name. Amen. Amen.